All right. Welcome, everyone, to the 2025 fourth quarter Beacon Church Collaborative Zoom meeting. Today, we will have a panel discussion addressing this topic: what really matters, what families living with disability want their church to know. We will begin with Shannon Hoyam, an emergency medicine physician and the mother of a 7-year-old disabled daughter. Shannon, if you just wave to everyone. There she is. Okay. We will then hear from Bryn Shario, Executive Director of Bridge and the mother of a young adult disabled son. Bryn.
Hi.
Then we will finish with
Hey,
Lindsay Wyland Capel. She is a disability consultant and she runs her own business called Everybody Therapy and Consulting. See, wave. There we go. Okay. So we're going to begin, Shannon, with you. And of course, I'm going to pose this question and then I'm just going to give you the floor. Would you please share with us what really matters, what you want your church to know from the perspective of being a parent of a 7-year-old disabled child?
Well, thank you so much, Jackie, for inviting me. I'm really humbled that you invited me to speak on this panel. So I appreciate that. So I think as I was reflecting on this topic, and there's a lot of components I think that we can break it down into, but if I had to summarize it in just a couple sentences, what I want the church to know regarding my daughter and her disability is that I believe that despite Grace's challenges, she has a place at the table at church, and not only, do I want her to be included, but I believe that she has something, she has something to contribute to the body of Christ, and that without her, the body is incomplete. And I brought my tissues because, sorry, this is something close to my heart. So I think, even before Grace was born, I, just in my walk, I have really desired for the kingdom of heaven. And let me just back up for a minute. So in the Lord's Prayer, when Jesus is talking to us about how to pray, he says, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And so I think that the Lord is directing us to pray for heaven on earth. And that begs the question, what qualities does heaven have that earth does not have? And Jesus talks a lot about, the kingdom of heaven. And I think there's a few things that pertain directly to the disability community. One is that heaven's order of things are upside down. And Jesus says, "The last will be first, and the first shall be last." And we live in a world where our society assigns value to people who are productive, independent, well-spoken, contribute economically, and it's a very, I think, achievement-oriented culture. But Jesus says pretty clearly, like, that is not the order, and that's not the hierarchy of heaven. Second thing is, God uses, and this is 1 Corinthians 1, 27, 29. God uses the simple things of the world to shame the wise. And so I think, and I wrote down the passage, I'll just read it. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. So I think Paul is saying that, God very intentionally chooses people who may be weak in an area in order to humble the strong and the wise. And so, all of that to kind of come back to what I said originally, which is, I think that there is a, there is work that the people in the disabled community have to do for the church that really no one else can do. And the body of Christ is incomplete without their participation. So that's kind of summarizing it. I have other things, but I want to give the panel enough time to talk or field any questions.
Okay, well, you certainly have a few more minutes. If you want to, I'm going to go through you and Bryn first before we open up for Q&A, because we definitely want to have a chance to be able to ask questions of either of you. So is there anything else, Shannon, that you want to share before I go to Bryn?
So I think just from a very pragmatic standpoint, I go to Jackie's church, Lakeside, and I think there's a few things that Lakeside has done that have been really great. Lakeside has always worked to consider Grace in her participation in Sunday school. She's young, so she usually doesn't go to the service, but for example, she goes to the tots classroom, which is the 2 to 5 year olds, even though she's almost eight, because developmentally that's where she's at. And I appreciate that, which is, it's more than than what happens at school. And also, I think the congregation has just been very open to including her, and by that I mean, Grace will walk around during the sermon in front of Pastor Vince, and nobody bats an eyelash. It's just it's great. So I appreciate that as a mom.
I got some questions for you, but I'm going to hold those up, and I'm sure
Okay.
others do as well. Thank you so much, Shannon. Okay, so Bryn, of course, you have a son who's a young adult, so it's a very different time in life than a child. Would you share your own personal experience and what you really want the church to know when it comes to a young adult disabled son and your engagement with the local church?
Sure. First of all, good morning, everyone, and thanks for giving me this opportunity to share about my son Joshua and my family's journey of faith. And thank you, Shannon, for sharing that as well. My Joshua is 33 years old, and he has autism. I'm going to share. He's what we call functionally verbal, meaning he can tell you what he needs, like go bathroom, pizza please, but he's not conversational at all. So I'm going to share with you a short 2 second video of Joshua, just so that you get a flavor of his personality and him. So hold on a second. We tested this, so I hope it doesn't go for a glitch. So there you go. Can you see my Joshy?
See? Okay. Yep.
Okay. So it's probably buffering, so I'm gonna manually move the needle of the video so you can see Joshua move, but the audio won't be there, so you won't hear him. He vocalizes the whole time and giggles and laughs. He's typically a very happy boy. So here goes. So he loves music. That's his caregiver in the background. Yeah, so that's Joshi. So I'm going to stop sharing right here. And okay, so he's not conversational, he's just functionally verbal. But what's truly amazing, though, is that he has strong receptive language. So he understands so much more than he can say. So for many years, attending church together was something my husband and I longed for, but found very difficult. When Joshua was younger, he's 33 now, so decades of working with the church and trying. When Joshua was younger, we used to take shifts on Sundays, and one of us would stay home with Josh. I have three boys, by the way, and Josh is the youngest. So one of us would stay home with Josh while the other attended church. And it worked logistically, right? But emotionally, it left us feeling very isolated. We missed our church community, the greetings after Mass, the shared conversations, the warmth. We were members, but not really present because we weren't together. It was always a shift, right? And consequently, nobody knew that we were together. Nobody knew that Jeff was my husband and I was Jeff's wife because they never saw us together, right? So, and one of the biggest reasons for this arrangement was because Josh can be noisy and he makes unexpected sounds, sometimes laughs out loud at random moments, noises that can catch people off guard. It's aberrant noises. It's not typical noise that would you hear from an adult, right? Baby noises, people can tune those out because they know it's coming from a baby. But for an adult, it's really jarring and distracting. But when that happens, when Joshua makes those noise, heads turn and eyes look. And even though people may not mean any harm, those stares sting. And in my many years, over 30 years of being a mom and being a mom of kids with disabilities, I have two boys on the autism spectrum. Joshua is low functioning. But I'll be honest, those looks have never gotten easier for me. And so, as a parent, I've always wrestled with two things. On one hand, I cherish the sacred quiet of worship, that hour when we can all focus our hearts on God. I never wanted Joshua's noises to take away from anyone's prayer because I do cherish that sacred hour. I mean, I want my quiet as well, so I can understand that. But on the other hand, I also knew that Josh needed to be there. Josh needed to learn through, Josh learns from experience is how he progressed. He's very tactile, he's very observant. He learns by experience, by watching, by observing, by being in the moment. And I wanted him to practice. So I needed, like that saying, we prepare our kids for the world, but we also prepare the world for our kids. How will the world know how to deal with people with disability if I don't put him out there, right? So I wrestle with that, but then I know that he can be distracting. If he never came to church, how could he ever learn what worship feels like, right? So we were stuck, torn between wanting peace for others and wanting growth for Josh. Then 2 years ago, we moved to Edmonds, Washington, and found a new church home. Looking back, I truly believe, as I was writing this, that's my looking back. As I was writing this, I truly believe that the move is God's doing. The church is beautiful, and not just the building, but the spirit of the space. The choir's music filled the sanctuary with such warmth. And for Joshua, there was something very special. A loft area that looked out over the church. From there, he could see everything, the priest, the congregation, the choir, all from above. And Joshua loves being up on high. He loves height. He loves looking down, and it gives him peace. And that loft became his safe space, a place where he could be part of worship, yet still have the comfort he needed. It was truly a game changer for us. So the first Sunday we went, Joshua lasted about 20 minutes. We wanted to set him up for success, so we knew going in that once he started vocalizing and feeling agitated, we were going to leave. We knew that going in. And so we wanted that 20 minutes of success for him and build on that. So once he became restless and started making noises, we left. It was 20 minutes. The next Sunday, and we celebrated that. That was progress for us. That was okay. The next week, we made it 30. He made it 30 minutes. And then the following week, 50. And by the end of the month, he sat through the entire hour. It wasn't overnight. It was slow, patient work, but it was beautiful, because we saw it firsthand. Now, Sunday Mass is part of Joshua's routine. He expects it. It's his Sunday. When we go up for communion, I'm Catholic, so we go up for communion. He walks with us, arms crossed across his chest, to receive a blessing instead of the host. He may not say the words, but I think and I want to believe that he understands the meaning because he's very quiet and is very reverent. And he knows once he gets to his seat that he puts his hands down. So he knew that the arms across the chest was when we go up for communion and receives the priest's blessing. In my mind, in his own quiet way, he worships. So my reflections on that. This journey has taught me something I believe to be very profound, that inclusion is not just about making space for everyone. It's about sharing grace. Joshua may not sing the hymns or recite the prayers, but his presence is prayer in itself. It reminds me, and I hope it reminds others, that worship is not about perfection. It's about participation. So to those in our church who welcomed us and who didn't stare and who allowed Joshua to be Joshi, I thank them. And they have no idea what it has meant to us, the patience, the kindness. It made church feel like home again for us, and we go every Sunday. And to any of the parents who might still be taking turns at home, I feel it, I see it, I know that loneliness, but I encourage that don't give up. Sometimes all it takes is the right space, the right timing, and the courage to try and try and try again. Today, Joshua stands beside us every Sunday. He may vocalize a little or hum when it's awfully quiet and people turn. That's okay. They smile now. And sometimes the priest hears him from up high because, we're high, so it kind of echoes. And so after church, that one Sunday that Joshua wasn't there, after church, Father Green asked me where Joshua was. So I knew he was listening to Joshua every time. And it's okay if he vocalizes a little now. People know him, people see him at communion. And because he's there, he's part of the body of Christ, just as he is. And that to me is the most beautiful thing.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for sharing those experiences. So what I want to do now is open the floor. If Shannon in particular you want to address, or Bryn, anything they've shared, please do. But now I welcome questions, getting more information, something more that these ladies might be able to share with you. I open the floor. Jessica?
Yeah, so thank you so much for sharing, both of you. Bren, I was curious. I know that the Catholic Church has been doing work to be more inclusive to people with disabilities, specifically developmental disabilities, and specifically sacramentally. Have you had discussions with your priest or the process of if Joshua wants to take communion or not being a possibility?
Yeah, so in the Catholic Church, as you may know, there's a process for receiving communion. Not everyone can automatically receive communion. There's a first communion, and then that's the start of receiving communion. Honestly, though, Jessica, although Nate, my higher functioning kid, went through the whole process, first communion, confirmation, through the Catholic Church. Joshua didn't. I didn't. To me, if he didn't fully understand the sacrament, it didn't matter. To me, what was important was he participated in church. I didn't have, I know, but to answer that question, I never, I didn't ask how he could receive communion. And honestly, it wasn't a priority for me. The priority was him being in church, and that's enough. You pick your battles, and that was my battle. And who knows? We will get there. Maybe that is my next step, Jessica.
Fair. Yeah. And I mean, the fact that he's coming and engaged, and it sounds like he wants to be there. That's just beautiful. Yeah. And I mean, it's everybody's journey is different and unique. I just know that the Catholic Church specifically has been working on how to sacramentally accommodate developmentally disabled people in a way that respects their incarnationality, their holiness of God, and at the same time understands that there is cognitive differences and have really been working to make a way so that there is a possibility for that. So might be a
I'm
discussion.
happy, yeah, and I'm so happy to see that, I'm happy to see as well that they're moving away from the special masses, that it's all, inclusive, separate and not separate.
Any other questions? Okay, well, I do have one. So, and this is for Bryn and Shannon to each answer. In your previous experience in church, did you ever feel like you had to get permission? As though when you walked in, am I allowed to do this, but I'm not allowed to do that with my child? Was there ever a sense that you needed to get that okay before you could let your child be who they are? Shannon, would you share with us?
Thank you for that question. I would say I guess the answer is yes, but not in a negative sense. When we joined Lakeside, Grace is still pretty young, so I haven't lived as long, with her as Bryn has with her son. And so, when you have a baby, the babies are all essentially the same, even if, your milestones don't completely align, but the expectations people have around babies are basically, it's similar. Her, like Grace's disability was not as obvious when she was younger. So, Grace needs complete assistance with everything. So she's nonverbal, she's developmentally delayed. She walks with a walker a little bit unsteadily, but that doesn't keep her from trying to move everywhere. She needs assistance with toileting. She's in diapers. So at school, she has a one-on-one aid. And when we joined the church, I wanted Grace to participate in Sunday school, but I wanted to accompany her because I didn't feel like that was fair to the teacher, the Sunday school teacher, to, add an additional student with kind of that level of need. So, I did ask the church if I could, attend Sunday school with Grace, and they said yes. And with all the volunteers that work with the children, you have to go through a background check. So we did that. But kind of paralleling Bren's experience currently, my husband and I, we all go to church together most Sundays. I have to work some Sundays, but most Sundays the three of us go to church. And then my husband and I, we trade off accompanying Grace. So one person goes to the service, and then the other person stays with Grace. But as part of the discussion with the church up front, I did ask them if she could attend a class where she's not with her peers, she's with her developmental peers, I guess you could say. And they were very accommodating, and so I appreciate that. Does that answer your question, Jackie?
Well, it does, but because we attend the same church, I know that Grace loves movement. She loves moving. She's always on the move. And so when we're in the sanctuary, you can sometimes hear Grace back there with you. She's moving around. It's not disturbing, but I was just wondering if that's something that you've were had a trepidation about, like, can I bring her in and just let her move around the back, down the sides? Would this be okay? Would you get, like Brent said, would you get the look, from someone, and then think, oh, maybe that's not a good thing? Did you ever feel that kind of hesitance in letting Grace actually come in and enjoy a service?
And I think I still do a little bit because I don't want, mostly because I don't want to distract people. People do look at Grace. I think she's delightful, and so I just choose to view that as, she's, people are enjoying her unique, delightful personality when they're, because she's little and she's got this little tiny walker. I should have brought a picture of her, but and she has a very sweet little angelic face, and she zooms around with her walker, which is, it's not something that you see commonly. And so people are curious. I don't think they're judgmental, but I think they're curious. And Pastor Vince did tell me at one point, like, it's okay to let her walk around in the sanctuary, and if that's how she wants to participate, that's fine. I still don't let her, I try not to let her like walk right in front of Pastor Vince while he's preaching, because I think that's very distracting. I think it's very distracting and probably detracts from, him trying to connect and communicate with other people. But to your point, like, she does, I do let her walk around in the back.
And to speak to that also, what Jessica was speaking, and Bren, about the sacraments, we don't really know how much she is absorbing of the music, of the words. That's between her and God, right? That's something very personal. So when Josh is going up, even if his hands are crossed, we don't know what he's absorbing, what's being spoken deep within his soul between him and God. And to me, that's the beautiful thing. That's the really beautiful part of church experience for families, is that we should never assume that we know what the Lord is communicating to that person. That's between him and them. And so every opportunity, door that's open in which they can experience it in whatever way they themselves experience it, we should never say no. We should never step back and say, that's not for you, because we don't know the ways God is working, right, with that person. So, Bren, I know you had mentioned about Josh in increments, right? First the 20 minutes, then the 30 minutes, and then finally the full hour. But did you, when you first started coming to this church, feel that same trepidation because of your past experience? It has to be either you or Jeff for a while. We'll all come together and just see what happens.
Oh, absolutely, because we didn't know about the loft in the beginning, so we were just down and at the back. We're always at the back because we're ready to, once he vocalizes, we're ready to step out, right? And when we found the loft, when we saw that there was a loft, there was space in there, we started going, and Joshua was quiet up there, and so we knew that it was golden for us. But to answer your question about permission, I don't think, personally, in my opinion, I think it was more that like Shannon, I didn't want to distract, but also I don't think it was asking permission to bring Joshua from others. It was really giving permission for myself to bring him, Yes. So I'm saying sometimes that inclusion is not the onus of the church. Inclusion is also the onus in the family. I mean, and you meet in the middle. And when you have a congregation that is kind and patient and smiles and includes you in conversation and not interact with you because they're also afraid, not judgmental, but they don't know how to handle that whole thing. It's why I think all of us parents, I think with disability, we have to take that courage to try and get there, because I think it's the only way we educate. I mean, we can talk about inclusion, but if there is no real life live experience in any one of us, we really don't know how to handle it, right? And that live experience really comes from if we share our kids. That's why I say it's sharing grace. I mean, I think there's a lot that people can learn from Josh. And if I don't give permission to myself to share him and bring him to church, they will never get to enjoy him. Their loss. So, yeah.
Okay. Any comments, thoughts, questions?
Here's Jack.
I had a question. I think of Bren is maybe regarding your older son, whether you had any encounters with the youth groups at church.
Thank you for that question. I think, honestly, I think it's harder for people who are higher functioning, and especially for Nate. I did not mention I have three boys, and two are on the spectrum. Joshua is nonverbal. Nate is higher functioning, but he has challenges fitting in, and people also are challenged to interact with him because of the for whatever reason. Was there a challenge? Yes, especially in the teenage years when they all congregate. I mean, when those years are the hardest years, I think. Now, as a young adult, he has an easier time. But when he was younger, he had a harder time getting into youth group. He'd always say, "How come even if I say the right things, I'm still not included in group?" That kind of thing. So, because they're high functioning, they feel it. They're more. So in that regard, I think awareness with our youth group, education maybe, on the different disabilities. Back in the day when Nate, he's 30 now, but back in the day when he was a teenager, the prevalence rate for autism or ASD was still not as high as now, so nobody really knew how to handle it. They just knew he acted different. So, yeah. So, did I answer your question?
Yeah, that's great, Brian. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Which, brings us to the thought that, we want our pastors to be educated, and many of them are really proactively doing that. But we have to think the whole spectrum of the pastoral staff, not only the senior pastor, but the associate pastor and the youth pastor, the young adult pastor, whatever those positions are, that education has to be broad spectrum. Because if they're interacting with young people or teenagers on the autism spectrum or other developmental disabilities, how would they do that? How could they welcome that person into that group? But also to educate the other young people in there that this is a person that we want to engage with, that we want to develop a relationship with. For sure.
If I might just add something to that,
Sure.
I think one thing that this is almost a question to the group, but I think one thing that I find very challenging is, Grace is almost 8, and so her peers are, they're very aware that she has challenges that they don't, but I think I struggle with figuring out how to talk about Grace's disability with other children.
Oh, I
Because some it's almost easier to talk about it with adults because
see.
you can explain it more of the complexity, I think. But with other children, I think it's really challenging.
It is. So, Jessica, we'll get you in a moment. Teresa, I think you were about to come on. You're on mute. There we go.
Yeah,
Go, Teresa.
I just wanted to say something, but I really appreciate that Shannon shared that, and I'm sorry that I jumped in because I did want to hear about Grace's experience as well. And if there are more things on that topic, I want to make sure we get back to that because this is really helpful. I just wanted to share an observation that we that St. Andrew Presbyterian in Renton, the church that I'm part of, is we do have several participants that come from group homes in the area, and we have a nice community of folks with disabilities. And we have tables set up in the back where they can color, they can just, get up and go just do something different. And then also there's an option for a quiet room if they ever just need to, go somewhere else and just get a break for a little bit. And I'm wondering if that is something you would see as helpful. Do they do that at your church? And maybe even for the broader group here, does anybody find that distracting? Or, I just kind of want to get a read on what's the current thought on having that sort of an option.
Shannon, did you want to respond to that?
Sure. So the church that Jackie and I are part of, Lakeside, it's not very big, and so there's not really a space for like a dedicated quiet room. However, people are welcome to step into the foyer, and also on a routine basis, at least probably once every 8 weeks, all of the children are included in the service. There's no Sunday school. And so when that happens, there are tables set up for coloring. There's little activity books that the kids get. And, anybody is welcome to use the activity books and color. And, anytime you do, I think, a service or a gathering with, smaller children, there's going to be, talking when other people are quiet and some crying and, kind of all the things that entails. And so I think that bridges easily to, our members who have some developmental disability and may want to, do a different activity while the pastor is speaking. Wouldn't you say, Jackie? Would you have anything to add?
No, agreed. Yes, I've seen it many times with the kids back there coloring and you know, because and I'm glad that the children are included, all the children. And, you know, some disabilities are you can see it, like Grace. Other disabilities you don't see. And so those are still children that belong and need to be a part of that service. And as Bryn said, just to absorb it, right? Just to absorb that whole church experience. So I'm glad that our church does do that. So I did want to, Jessica, because I did want to open it up to those. I know we have some pastors here, Joe Kim and Kelly Spencer. And just to ask you, what does your church do? So, Jessica, is this on the topic or do you want to go ahead and
start? I was going to answer Shannon's question.
Okay, go ahead.
There's some really good books, children's books, that explain disabilities and differences and different ways to interact with peers, to people. I would find some good books. I don't have any off the top of my mind. I've seen them before. I've read them before. I don't have one that's coming that I know the title. I have one that's coming to my mind, but I don't remember what the title is, but that's one way that I highly, highly suggest introducing. And it wouldn't be an introduction to disabilities since there is more integration in schools now. But that's what all I was going to say.
Okay, thank you. Very, very important. So, Pastor Kelly, can I ask you of what we've been talking about, the church's response? What has your church been doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I really thank you all for sharing so much, and especially the experiences of your precious little one, Shannon and Bryn. I think my hope is to always give everyone of any ability space in worship to do whatever they need. Because I think I took a class in seminary called Ministry with People with Disabilities, and a lot of it is about just, you know, not waiting for someone that has disabilities to then address or change or fix something that makes things more accessible, but rather just having that be kind of your standard of care. And I take that very seriously. And so, you know, in all of our instructions or in all of the way that we talk about how we do things in worship, to try to be very clear so that even someone who's never been in church before can understand at least a little bit of what we're doing. And then to leave space that, you know, if you want to do this, if you feel like standing, that's great. If you need a break, feel free to use the bathrooms or, you know, those sorts of things. And that way it doesn't feel like something is different because someone who has some sort of difference came in. So that's my hope. Whether or not I'm great at that is a different question. And I also think, being able to preach on different kinds of texts. I'm really passionate about including healing stories and making sure that they are approached from a perspective of not just removing a disability as if it's something to be fixed, but rather seeing, at least in my experience, most of the healing stories are about the community changing and welcoming folks or being in connection with one another. And so I think a lot of it from a 30,000 foot view is about kind of setting a baseline of just being an inclusive and welcoming space. And that way it doesn't have to be someone came in and we had to do something different, while also leaving it open. If someone does come and has a different experience or needs something that we haven't been providing before, we're happy to do that. And that can just become another part of our regular practice. You know, I think we try to do that for folks with disabilities. We try to do that for queer people. We try to do that for immigrants or folks who've never been to church before. There's so many people that can walk into church not feeling welcome, that the more we can do to set kind of an open tone, hopefully it is the better for everyone.
Okay, thank you. And Pastor Joe, for your church, what approaches have you taken?
So we're new we just started the ministry, there about a year ago. We have a daughter on the autism spectrum. And what had happened was it was the church itself that rallied to make sure that our daughter was taken care of. And it was such a blessing. And what that did is it gave me in particular permission to explore how we can expand the care, not just for my daughter, but for other people in the church who also, let me use the word, that have disabilities of whatever nature. And so we designated what was normally the nursing room, and we turned it into a disability like room. So in other words, there's a priority there. People have options as to like different areas that they can, participate in the congregation or the service, if you will. But we made it a priority so that the disability folk have first option, first priority, and those things. And we're still fledgling. That whole disability ministry is fledgling. I got to be honest, we're still learning it as we go along. So I'm so grateful for everyone that's on this call, and I'm really grateful for everything you guys are doing. It's really helping us try to understand the needs that are out there, and then it's giving us ideas as to how to best approach this so that the church becomes more inclusive in this area.
Oh, wonderful. And that's a great segue into Lindsay, our third panelist, where she's going to pop up a PowerPoint, but I wanted Lindsay to kind of close us out. Some of these things we're going to be familiar with. Some of these things may be something new. And for Pastor Joe, as you're fledgling and learning, this PowerPoint will be made available to everyone. Lindsay has given us permission to do that. So I'll make sure that it gets out to everyone after. But I'd like to yield the floor and let Lindsay just to kind of finish out our topic today of what really matters and what churches really do need to know. Lindsay, it's yours.
Yes, I'm glad to be with you. I come to you from Grand Rapids, Michigan, near Lake Michigan. So, glad that this could be on Zoom so I could be part of it. So we have a short amount of time and I have so much I would love to say. So we're just going to have to do a portion of it and then you'll get the presentation so you can read some of the additional pieces as well. When we're thinking about responding to the call, churches welcoming families affected by disability, and in this conversation, really thinking about intellectual disability. Mine is not progressing. That's very strange. Okay, I guess I'll
There you
do
go.
it this way. There's a button on the screen that's working, so we'll go with it. Okay, so a couple of things to keep in mind, and I love that this conversation has not been about a segregated ministry to people with disabilities. This has been about the life of the church. So that's where I'm at too. I love thinking about worship and youth group and all the spaces where people are in the church and how can we be intentional in all those ways. Behavior is communication. This gets to the people that you can't tell have a disability. There's people who will kind of shun people culturally, right, if they don't follow the rules. But oftentimes that's because they have ADHD or they have autism or they have a brain that works differently, right? They're trying to communicate something. So if you have a kid in Sunday school who's having a hard time and maybe acting up in a way that seems disruptive, trying to get down to the bottom of what are they trying to communicate, what's going on for them, versus just trying to get them to follow the cultural rules. So there's lots of people within churches, depending on how big your church is, but just this is an idea that you can have some momentum by creating a team to think about, both individuals and that universal design that Reverend Spencer was talking about. So who would be good on that team? You can think about educators, PT, OT, social workers, speech paths, healthcare professionals, group home workers, people who have siblings with disabilities, and so forth. So there's lots of resources that you can gather in your own congregation to think intentionally in this way. So I hope that you will see a bunch of examples that kind of you can leave with a couple tangible things that you can do with your congregation. So I love thinking about things in terms of universal design and responsive design. So universal design is creating things as accessible as possible for as many people as possible. Perfection doesn't really exist when we're talking about accessibility because there's tensions of what people might need. But we want to make it as accessible as possible. And the idea here as a church is to communicate to someone when they come, "We were expecting you, and we thought about you before you got here. And we've created space for you so that you can experience belonging," which is very different than expecting someone to name what they need and self-advocate for everything that they need, right? They're very different things. Okay, so vertical habits is, these are just a couple of them. Thank you, what can I do? Bless you, with icons. So there's this book, I'll feature it at the end, from Barbara Jane Newman. All of her work is really wonderful. She passed away from cancer a couple years ago. Such an incredible woman, but her work lives on. And so this is about taking elements of liturgy and giving them more easy to understand names that we use in normal life, and putting icons. So that concept of universal design for learning, where you're offering options of how to engage, how to learn, how to intake information, and also how to communicate or process what you're learning. This is a couple pictures. Most of these are from actual places that I've been. These are flags and ribbons from a local church where, if you think about, for people who can't read or people who can't talk, singing time, giving them a flag or a ribbon gives them a way to be participating in the worship, right? Mm-hmm. This is a sensory wall, so building right in your space some tools that folks can use. You see an egg shaker, again, a way that someone can participate in worship, whether or not they can read the words or say the words. And one thing that I'll just say is many things that we think of for children are actually, if we did them for everybody, create access for everybody, right? So we do motions for songs with kids instinctively. Well, it helps me learn to move my body too. And it helps me learn to watch someone do sign language or to watch someone do motions to a song, right? So we've kind of made things childlike that actually could be helpful for all of us to intake information. Picture books, for example, pictures on a screen during a sermon are super helpful. Sensory tools. So again, a sensory wall, fidget baskets, again, communicating that fidgets are available for everyone who needs them. They're not fidgets for disabled kids or, right? It's adults might find them useful. Anybody might find them useful, right? So we just offer them and whoever needs them can use them. Wiggle seats, this green bumpy, there's a smooth side on the other side for folks that have trouble sitting still or just need that sensory input, right? There's all kinds of different types, but this is one example. A sensory kind of walkway around a pole, maybe in a children's ministry area where you're doing the singing and a kid can just circle the pole if they need to move, or that could be in a sanctuary somewhere. And then the exercise band is just an example of you can wrap that around the bottom of a chair and people can kick that. So these things are helpful for kids and adults. Here's a couple examples of worship spaces. Oh, the top got cut off, but this is what some of you were talking about. So I won't go into depth here, but some offering options for folks to go to different places and hopefully with a door, so that during passing of the peace or greeting, there's actual interaction with other people if the person wants it. On the top is what some call a playground. And if you Google that, you'll find all kinds of information. But the idea is to create space to say, this is an area where you can move. This is an area where you can color. So maybe we think about not just doing it on the week where all the kids are in there, but maybe we offer adult coloring pages in the back or maybe whatever. Offering these things kind of regularly. So they removed a pew, they put soft ground in, they put some pillows and just saying, this is a spot you can go. And I think to Reverend Spencer's point too about the culture, you know, just naming We're so glad people are here, and part of our church culture is that we want to welcome you to do what you need to do. We live in bodies. If you need to go to the bathroom, please go. If you need to move, there's an area over here where people move sometimes. You know, just so it's not like this special thing for this one person, but it's just like we can be in bodies. We can do things. You can stand or you can sit, right? We've got options. Okay. I know I just have just a couple of minutes. So these are my kiddos hanging in the tent. You get the idea here of different quiet spaces or sensory places where people can limit sensory input, which some people really need. Anticipate that many people with intellectual disabilities or developmental disabilities also have other disability needs, right? So a table where there's a spot for someone who uses a wheelchair. An adult changing table, seat cushions, large print bulletins, just offer these things. And then food disabilities, thinking about always offering gluten-free, always asking about what people's food allergies are before an event. This is a peanut-free table, labeling food items and indicating what common allergens are in them. These are all things that can help. So responsive design. Is kind of thinking about the individual and coming around what they need and responding to their actual individual needs. So an example might be a mug for communion or giving someone a job who needs to move during the service. Give them permission by saying you could take the offering every week and like get some energy out. Or visual communication boards for those who don't talk. Training buddies. The conversation about parents taking turns that was actually in here later. I'm not going to get to it, but wouldn't it be great if a mom doesn't have to go with their kid to nurse or to childcare or to the Sunday school, but if there could be a rotation of helpers who are trained to do that so that the family actually gets some respite. So I think I'm going to stop there because there's just so much to go through, but I will maybe just. Yeah, I'm going to go to here's a page of resources. And the Noun Project is where I got some of those icons that you saw. So you can use those in different ways. But yeah, these are some of the different resources. There's wonderful intake worksheets that children's ministries might use to find out about all their children, what their strengths are and their challenges and triggers are, those kinds of things. So. I'll pause there.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so very much, Lindsay. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again to Bryn and to Shannon, as well as Lindsay, for just sharing really your experiences. I think it was informative for all of us to understand what really matters for families who come on our doors. Many times we make assumptions about what we think that family needs or doesn't need or what their experiences have been. But certainly hearing from them firsthand, their own testimonials, we should say, are important for us to know. But not only to hear, but to listen, because listening requires action. When we listen, then we say to ourselves, how can we react? How can we respond to what we've just heard? What we can do differently than what we're doing now? And it can also be an applause. We're doing these things. We're on the right track. And so for I know a lot of those that are here in this meeting already have been doing those things, churches that have been very proactive, and I've been thrilled to see that. And so I'm hoping that that will continue to be the case. And so that concludes. We're at the very end of the hour. Thank you, everyone who has attended. I appreciate that very much. And I hope you have a wonderful afternoon.
Yeah, Jackie,
Thank
when will
you.
the recording be available?